welcome to another episode of Another Effin' Podcast About Sitcoms. I'm your host, Michelle. I'm joined with Dan and Luke and Stan, and they all have last names, and you can figure it out if you are subscribed. I am going to start with our new segment that's now old. What did you watch this week?
What we're watching, everybody listen. Boop.
I watched The Cobras of Kais. My 12-year-old is like kind of scarily obsessed by this show now. To the point where I was like, okay, yeah, I lived through the 80s. I get it. But he was like, we have to watch it. So for Thursday and Friday, I think it was those days. It doesn't matter. I got through season one and not got through. I enjoyed the fuck out of it.
Yeah,
highly
so good,
recommend.
Isn't it?
It's just I was rewatching it and it was wonderful.
Just as good. Sorry, Michelle. I didn't mean to blab
You. You were right with me. You were sitting next to me most
of
the time. And then the other, and so I'll report back on season two and season three as I get through them. I know you're waiting.
Oh, I want to talk about it because it gets better and better and better.
Well, I know I've already told you, but like having had the writers on the Jenny McCarthy show, that it was just like, oh God, it is so wonderfully nostalgic. And the music, I love it.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. The fact, oh shit, this is so funny. So holding, the kid grabs his headphones and is listening to Guns N' Roses. And I was like, what song is that? And Holden goes, it's the Roses and Guns song. That I was like, fuck you. The other thing that I want to talk about, and then we can go move on, is my kids would not read this book I bought for them called Gregor the Overlander. It's a Suzanne Collins Hunger Games book. So I'm reading it. And guys, I recommend it. It's fun. It's a
Wife Michelle just read. Sorry to cut. We're always cutting you off. I'm sorry.
I'm a woman. I expect it.
Well, you shouldn't. Not from us.
I'm so sorry, but as a man, I need to tell you exactly how you feel.
Okay. Thanks.
No, my wife got the. It was like a Hunger Games like epilogue book.
I read that too.
She really enjoyed that quite a bit.
It's dark. It's darker than the Hunger Games, if that's possible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. Holden was like, I'm good. I'm not going to read this.
It's a little tough. I mean, I can imagine like Handmaid's Tale and, as we talked about before, and Hunger Games are a little tough to
get
through. Now, yeah.
Yeah. I will never watch the I know how great it is, but I will never watch the Handmaid's.
Same here. Same here. That's the only book that like, you know how like Joey has to put Cujo in the freezer? I have to put that book in the freezer because
I will never read that again. Margaret Atwood is my favorite author.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Yes.
But that book scarred me and I read that in the 90s or 80s.
Yeah. Same here. Same here. And it's more of a blueprint than it is a work of fiction. So you're just kind of like, no.
The other book that's like that for me, which I read in a woman's studies class. Look at me. is called Woman on the Verge, I think is the name of it. And it is so disturbing that I still have nightmares about it. It's about this woman who's either gets divorced or her husband dies. And she keeps just getting put back in society, like to the point where she lives in the airport and cleans houses to try to stay afloat. And eventually she just can't. It is so dark. Okay. All right, I'm done. Those are my weekly things.
Nice.
I watched, I got back into Superstore, which is really great, and I think we're probably going to wind up doing on the podcast. It's in the middle of the sixth season, which is its last season, I've learned. I agree with the large internet perspective that nobody ever wants to see or hear about COVID in a show. But they do it in a very, it's just part of their world. It's not the focus. And it's really interesting to see that they've just incorporated masks and distancing, et cetera, into their show.
I am a big fan of the show. I have not been very happy with this season, but I don't, my wife and I were talking about this the other day. Like, I don't know what it is. There's something missing from the show for me. And I cannot tell you what it is. I don't know if it's because Amy's left.
I actually think her leaving is a big deal.
I think so, but there's also, I don't know. It's hard to, there's this, what's really good about the show, and yeah, I would love to do the show eventually, but what's really great about it is how it does have its finger on the pulse of like blue collar America about just trying to survive in the world. I mean, like the episode where, I can't remember his name, but the guy who gets taken away by ICE
Mateo.
Was amazing. It was really,
that was
like, hits
so good.
Yeah. This season, I'm having a harder time getting into it. And I think there's a part of it that's like, I don't want to be reminded about COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to escape that. But it's also, it's so weird because it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And I just don't know why I don't like it. And I can't figure it out. I mean, I have laughed out loud at a few things. And it's a great show. But
yeah. Well, you can't have Glenn / Mark McKinney in anything and not laugh out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's season six, and shows struggle to keep going and maintain it. I think Amy leaving was a bigger deal than I thought it would be. I feel like she became, I feel like it started as, is, I want to say his name's Noah, but it's not. It's Jonah.
Jonah, yeah.
I feel like the show started as Jonah's and then became Amy's in a way. Like, and then her leaving sort of was like, now we have a collection of everything except the main piece. I don't know. I don't want to go too far into it because we probably want to talk about it.
This.
But I will say, even at the maybe de-elevated level, I'm still really digging it.
Yeah.
Nice. Do-do-do-do-do. He's digging it.
I finished Search Party this week.
Oh.
Wow. Wow.
A journey?
Like, my brain has been punched in the head a few times after watching the show. It's
really?
Your brain's head?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's so like, oh my goodness gracious. I can't, it's not a sitcom, so we're never going to do it because I don't know what the situation is that brings the comedy. And they definitely jacked up the comedy level the last few episodes. But, oh man, it's a bit of a mind fuck. Because a lot of crazy shit does happen.
I can't wait.
Yeah, and I also started The Boys.
Oh, boy. I didn't know you hadn't seen that. What do you think?
It's good. It's really good. And I'm surprised, like, my wife is into it, too, so we're watching it together. It's clearly making an impact because I'm having dreams about it, where I'm on the show, and that's happened when I watched The Wire. Like, I kept having dreams.
Where were I lived you on in The Wire?
Yeah. I would have dreams that I lived in like a one of those Baltimore townhouses that were all run down that they
the tenements?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is really good. It's very graphic.
Oh,
in every
man.
Sense of the word.
Yes. How far into it are you?
If
you
know? Only like episode three.
Yeah, it goes there. And I hate to, not that it matters, but the comic is even worse.
Oh really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah,
they
not
do a nice
for
job.
Me.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. No, I was just gonna say, buckle up. That's I guess my best.
I can imagine.
Advice.
I imagine. I mean, it hasn't eased up. And Jack Quaid is very good, but it is hard to not see Dennis Quaid when he works.
Crazy how much they're alike.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the mouth.
Better than Randy, though.
It's true. He does keep saying the shitter's full, which I thought was a little weird.
They work it in organically.
They do. Yes, they really do.
Sometimes the three words aren't all put together. You have to sort of like...
You have to piece it.
You have to put it together. That's
does good. A dog watch them have sex?
Yeah. Yeah.
All
I don't know.
I can think about.
Got hit by a mule. Eyes went straight. Fell down a well. Eyes went back.
Dan, did you do anything besides Frozen 2 this week?
Well, I did. I watched episode 4 of WandaVision.
Oh, right.
Which I will not discuss because I know Stan has not seen it.
Thank you.
But also, I think it'll be worth talking about maybe when it's all over. Mm. I have a lot of thoughts on this episode that I will, again, will keep to myself for now. But I think it'll be worth talking about maybe later on.
I agree. I think even though it's not a sitcom, because it involves sitcom tropes so much, mm-hmm. that it would warrant an episode.
I think it also, this is not a spoiler, but I think this episode has a lot to do with the way people watch television.
Yeah.
and I'll just say that then, and the way that you get wrapped up in things that are not real, but feel very real. So that's the only thing I'll say. But yeah, I think, like I said, I think when it's all over, I think it was only 8 episodes altogether. So probably worth discussing.
Yeah, it's also, I have a theory, and I don't want to, I'm trying to be as vague as possible by getting my theory, but I think there's also a thing about the impact that sitcoms have on us and the comfort level.
Yep.
And so, which is why they haven't addressed that, but I have a feeling that's what's involved. So it'd be interesting to talk about that as well. So yes, I think we should save the show and do it.
Awesome. Okay. Well, let's move on to the main topic.
Bing.
Thank you, guys. The show we are reviewing / talking about today is called Plain House.
Hey, remember when all of time stood still?
And here's a synopsis. Childhood friends Maggie Caruso and Emma Crawford have shared countless adventures growing up together. Now Maggie and Emma are in store for one of their biggest adventures, raising a baby.
Yeah, I chose the show. I love this show. I mean, we'll definitely talk about one of the episodes that gets hit really close to home for me, but I think what's great about what I like about this show is that it's really just two people having a good time while they watch while they work together. And right. And there's something about that. I mean, like, I don't know why I'm drawing this comparison, but my brain just did. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the Cannonball Run movies.
Oh,
yes, of course.
Okay. So the comedy in Cannonball Run, give or take, I mean, granted, I was 8, so I thought it was hilarious, but it's whatever. But you really watch it because you're watching Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. joke around and Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise.
I was like, those two were the first two you mentioned where I was like, they were in that movie?
Oh, yeah. But because they just. But it's really just a bunch of people hanging out, having a good time.
Right.
And that's what you really take away from it. And I feel like that's the same way with this show, is it's less about the what
situation.
Hijinks will they get into, and more about them creating this world where they can all get along. I mean, yeah.
I'm totally in support and agree to that. That was my by far biggest takeaway is, you know, one thing we had said off mic is obviously all of us have been in the improv scene for a while, is like how delighted we were to just see, oh, this person wrote it. Oh, this person was script supervisor. Oh, look at this guest star. It was almost like seeing like all these wonderful people you've loved through the years being given the keys to a castle. And it was just like, hey guys, do whatever you want. Like, and my guess is like, they love
characters
Kenny Loggins.
Welcome.
Let's do an episode about Kenny Loggins. Like, what a wonderful, like, that must have been the shit, right? To be able to, I feel like doing this. And I don't mean to be so, like, willy-nilly, like there wasn't thought put in it. I just mean, like, it seemed like they were like, these are the things we love and we're gonna put them in the show.
There's just something fun. I felt like what's really cool is that everybody blended into the world really easily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Keegan-Michael Key, I don't know how close they were, but like it felt like they'd known each other for years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And one of the episodes I chose was the one where Jane Kasmerick shows up.
Yeah.
Hello.
Great. That was probably my favorite episode.
She is just like, She picks up where they left off. I mean, like, and who knows if they knew each other, but for them to all act in such a way that it just felt so comfortable was great to watch.
And again, this is all in my imagination, although it seems like you feel it the same way, Luke, but I'm imagining that they also had the clout to say, I love Jane Kasmerak, whose name I always get wrong. Let's see if she's interested. Like that you had the freedom to even be like, this person's awesome. Let's work with them. And they did. You know, that's really cool.
I mean, I think that a lot of it was them. I mean, I remember reading an article a long time ago about how, you know, like, I think Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish was on an episode. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, hey, I love him. Let's see if he wants to do it. And they were like, great. And I'm sure like Jane Kasmerak, they were like, I don't know. See if she wants to do it.
Yeah.
Which is tough because, like, you know, there's a famous story about there's a movie, I think it's called Private Dicks with, hang on, stay with me.
I'm here.
With Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan, directed by Kevin Smith, and it's a buddy cop movie. And
what?
Yes. Yes.
I don't think that movie's called Cop Out, though.
Cop Out, yes. I think it was originally called Private Dicks, and then it became Cop Out. That's what it is. And so the famous story is that Kevin Smith was super excited to do this movie because Bruce Willis is a hero of his, and he was all excited, and he pitched this movie idea, or somebody had given him the script, and he was like, hey, I think Bruce Willis would be great with Tracy Morgan, blah, blah, blah. And then day one, Bruce Willis is like, yeah, I'm here. What do you want?
Boo.
And that, but that's a fairly common thing. Yes.
Right,
where, like, you can say, like, oh, I want to have so-and-so be on this show.
Right, never meet your heroes.
Yeah. And I feel like the opposite happened with this show in so many ways. Like, especially the Kenny Loggins episode, you know, where they just got Kenny Loggins and he's like, hey, you want a hug? You know, and I'm sure there was a sense of like, holy shit, we're hugging Kenny Loggins and he's singing to us right here. And I love that. I love watching, you know, people.
Our dreams come true in front of us.
Yeah. Like, this is what you would have dreamed of one day, right? Like, imagine if we had a show and... And do you guys know Lennon and Jessica, does their friendship predate, like, meeting? Did they meet through improv, or were they actually childhood friends in real life? Does anybody have...
No, they met through improv.
It was through improv? Okay.
And
what I was just going to say is, like, the idea of, like, it almost sounds like a wildest fantasy situation, and then we would do a show together, and we would do it about whatever we want, but it came true for them. Like, how amazing!
Yeah. I feel like you get that, and maybe I'm reading more into it because, you know, like I said, we know some of the people or whatever, but, like, it's fun watching people ask for toys, get it, and play with them well.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's really fun to watch. There's a lot of, I can't think of any examples at the moment, but there's some shows where you feel like, you know, they gave the creators, like, not necessarily carte blanche, but enough to
hang themselves.
Yeah.
And they did.
That would be the opposite. No, I mean, like, you know, I feel like Seinfeld in a lot of ways was really great because they were like, well, here's a show, do what you want with it about your stand up. And there was like, okay, we're really going to see what we can do with it. Cause I don't want to just do another show. I want to see what I can do with it.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, Home Improvement, which is like, all right, let's just electrocute me for the 10,000th time.
Yeah.
And
put a hot girl on there.
Put a hot girl on there and I'll grunt and we'll be done.
You know, it's funny to me, though, because the way we sort of just described it, you almost would expect 10 episodes of the craziest shit. But this is one of the most grounded shows I think we've probably ever done.
Oh, yeah.
And Michelle and I were saying last night, too, it's very episodic. Like, you really...
You need to know what happened.
Yeah. Like, episode to episode, things grow and change. And that is not common to the shows that we have been reviewing.
Yeah. In fact, there was a couple moments, because I've seen the whole thing, top to bottom, T to B. And that's
A to Z.
A to Z. X to the Y.
I like T to B. I think T to B is the thing to do. Everybody, please start saying T to B.
That's I've heard Manzuka say that once, and I just love it. T to B, top to bottom. And they do reference, like, there's one where they talk about how she taught the cops to do a striptease, and that's actually an episode. It's really great. And Bobby Moynihan and Ian Roberts are both cops, and they do, like, a full Monty thing, and it's hilarious.
Wait, we missed Bobby? He was in one of the episodes?
He was in one of the episodes, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Ian Roberts, Stan was like, is that Ian Roberts?
Yeah. I wasn't quite sure if it was him, but then his name is Ian. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. What a weird coincidence that would have been.
And Zach Woods being Zach.
Yeah, he was Zach.
Yeah, so great.
Yeah.
He's so wonderfully bizarre. Like, he's just so bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you guys know how I feel about The Office, but I think he's like 10 times more likable maybe in this show than perhaps in The Office. Or maybe he's used differently.
I think he's more likable because he's not nearly as, he's not passive in a way like he is on Silicon Valley or The Office, where he's not a doormat on those shows, but he's definitely lower status, which he plays really well. He is high status. Like, he's very confident. He's very into his thing. There's an episode of Playing House where they think he's getting catfished. And so they trail him, and the woman is like too beautiful, and like in fact, the like Emma's wearing one of the clothes, one of the shirts that she has, and she's like, "Oh, I have this shirt. It's from the whatever catalog." He's like, "Yeah, she's a model." And they're like, "There's no way, you know." And then she shows up, and yeah, she is. She's beautiful, and she's whatever. She does turn out to be a thief, but it wasn't a catfish scenario.
Good to know.
Yeah. But it's
great. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, where the Bocephus character comes for the first time.
Okay,
which is
good.
The trucker hat. If you haven't seen the show, everybody, I feel like you're probably not getting any of the references that I'm making.
It is true that a lot goes on, and a lot of offbeat things go on, like the Bocephus character. Like, when they try to get into the Kenny Loggins show, that felt very much like, you don't usually see stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't usually see it almost reminded me of, like, an improv show, right? It was like, let's take three very distinct, unique characters to try and crack into a rock concert. And, like, it was like, this is pretty fun.
Yeah, Bocephus had shown up before, and I love that Pamela Adlon came on, and it was, that looked like...
Oh, my God.
One take. I mean, it's one shot.
No, Stephanie. That wasn't Pamela.
Oh, no, different character. Stephanie, you're thinking of Stephanie Weir.
Stephanie Weir is in there, too, but Pamela Adlon is the guitar tuner.
That's
didn't know who she was.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's. I mean, and it's like one of those things where it's like she's in two or three shots, so it was probably like a few hours of work, and she just came in, did her bit, and then left. And
I mean, I was going to say, I don't know for sure, but it also felt like, I mean, obviously they're almost everyone in the show is a very talented improviser. It felt like there was probably a lot of improv.
I agree.
That scene felt like they were like, here's the general idea, you guys go.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of like overlapping dialogue, and it was very funny.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I also, they laugh a lot on the show, like the way people do. And I really hope those are genuine, just enjoying each other laughs as a, you know what I mean? Because who doesn't like to see people have fun, you know? Well, me. I mean, but most people do. Most people do.
Yeah. Well, I was like psychopaths. So yeah, that would be
I believe it's sociopaths. It's sorry.
Wow.
Hey, everybody. What's happening? I am here with the stars, creators, producers, writers, directors. I feel like there's more titles to what you guys did on the show, but basically the heart of Playing House, Lennon Parham and Jessica St. Clair. How are you guys?
Hi.
Good. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being here. I got to tell you, one of the reasons I picked this show was right in the middle of the pandemic. I was just having lunch and trying to find some comfort food TV.
Yeah.
And Hulu was like, hey, have you ever seen Playing House? And I was like, I've seen Playing House. Just said again, you know what? That was nice.
Oh.
So.
Well, we're so excited Hulu even suggested us. Sometimes I don't know if anybody can find us. So that's
Do you
really
have
nice
a live subscription to Hulu? Because I think you can only watch it if you have the Hulu Live. Yeah, it's so tricky because people are like, where can we get it? And I'm like, buy it somewhere. That's the only way I know.
I know. And it's so frustrating.
You can do, I think it's also on the USA. It's all subscribers app. And
subscribers.
I don't know how many subscriptions I have. They just seem to pop up and like, I think I have, like, I just got Discovery Plus.
Great.
I don't know how it just showed up. Okay.
Do you have Disney Plus?
I do.
That's why.
Oh,
I didn't realize you get both. Okay.
Yeah, it's
now.
All connected. All
right. Well, I'm so glad we got together to hammer out the different cable packages.
Yeah, that's really like what I wanted to talk about.
Streaming platforms.
Lennon really could. I feel like the only time I ever see Lennon experience or express anger is when she's on the phone with customer service cable people.
Oh.
That's like the only time it comes out. She'll just be like, I gotta talk to your manager. And I'm like, who is this woman?
That is, you know, it's funny. That's why I got married, because my wife is that person. And I would be like, you want me to pay more and take more? Okay, sure. And she's just like, as soon as you're like, hi, is this cable? Talk to the manager now. I'm like, you do it. I'm out. I can't.
I like to get a name. I like to kill them with kindness. I like to get a name. I'd be like, Carly, where are you from? You sound like you're from Alabama. I've got family in Alabama. Carly, tell me what the fuck is happening with
My wife does a thing where she starts the sentence with like, look, I know this is not your problem, uh-huh. but you're the third person I've talked to. I just.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good manipulation.
Yeah. So this has been our customer service podcast. Thank you so much.
This is great.
So my first question is, like, how did Playing House come to be? How did it start?
So, yes, Lennon and I were at the UCB in New York, and we've told this story so many times, so I'll give like just the highlights. But we never performed together because at that point there were so few women that they were sort of spread out amongst the teams. So we sort of admired each other from afar. And then I moved to LA and Lennon did a one woman show called She Tried to Be Normal that came to LA that Jason Mantzoukas, who was my first partner, directed. And so of course I thought I have to go see this. I go to see this show. I'm like, my brain exploded. Like when you see somebody that is destroying your brain because their comedy is so good, you can't contain it in your consciousness. Mm-hmm. That Brett Gelman was sitting next to me and I had to punch him. I had to take my fist and I needed to give him dead arm after dead arm because I'm like, this bitch is so funny. And after that, I didn't even think I want to write with this person. I was like, I need to make her my best friend. Because I just knew that I loved her. And so then I casually started stalking her.
At that point, hadn't we like already had like a weird like lunch or something?
Maybe. There'd been like interest, but I didn't start like a full court press until after that. And so I really stalked her. And then eventually my manager said, hey, you know, what if you and Lennon were to write together or come up with something together? And I was like, well, that's crazy. Like, I'm never going to find anyone who's going to want to write that's the type of girl, you know, girl friendship porn that I want to write. And then we got together over chili and
turkey chili.
And
R.I.P.
Blue Plate. And we, not even the pandemic didn't even bring Blue Plate down. I think probably some health code violations. And we laughed through that meal harder than we've ever laughed. And that was just trying
to come up with that, like something, like a kernel of an idea. Mm-hmm. And then so we had an idea. We took it around. We pitched it. And HBO like bought us. Like sent us to script, basically, like we sold the pitch to them. So they paid for us to write a script. It was our first thing. In the meantime, both Jess and I got on multicams. yours was a single cam, but it.
I think I've been fired from like a multicam. I've been fired from two multicams. Yeah. And I think I was on something else. Who knows what?
But, congratulations.
But so we were both on things. And then within like 24 hours, the show I was on got canceled. And the pilot that we wrote got passed on by HBO. We'd already decided, my husband and I had already decided to move from Brooklyn to LA because I just kept, that was where everything was happening. And so on our trip out to like look at apartments, Jess and I, we got together another pitch for a new show, which was a different version of the pilot basically that we had written for HBO that was like less dark and less sad and more positive about friendship.
Yeah.
And we took it to production companies and then on our drive cross country, I found out we had gotten like a blind script deal at NBC to write that pilot, which became Best Friends Forever.
Right. And then Best Friends Forever was a crazy experience because we wrote the script and then they didn't pick it up to pilot. But then they announced all the pilots and it wasn't ours. So we were like, oh, that's so sad. And they were like, actually, we have like $5 left over. Would you want to like shoot like a sizzle reel of this like with $5? And we were like, no, that's not going to work. If you give us that $5, we'll shoot the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, what? That's not going to work. But we're like, no, promise. And it wasn't $5, actually $500,000, which is not anything when it comes to... Pilots are usually a couple million dollars at the least. So we were like, give us that $500,000 and we'll produce it. So we we did guerrilla like shooting of it and flew a 9-year-old girl across the country and shot on the streets of Brooklyn without a permit and delivered to them
a beautiful pilot.
Yeah. A beautiful pilot. I mean, we shot on a stage that was used for porns. Mm-hmm. And we redressed the apartment.
The show.
Yes. We redressed the apartment to look like this beautiful brownstone. Anyway, we pulled up some real magic. It almost killed us. And we turned this in and
learned all our hard lessons on during.
Yeah.
That
show. Got it.
But shock. I think they were quite shocked when they got it because they couldn't believe. Well, first of all, that we were shooting on the streets of New York for $5. They were very shocked by. And then they said, "Okay, we'll give you a 6-episode order." So we shot all of that. It was a dream. They ended up putting us after Betty White's Off Their Rockers, which defeated us roundly in the ratings every week. And it really was tough to have Betty White destroy our dreams.
Though at a one, like Betty White was getting a 1.8 and we were getting a 1.4, and now it's like 0.6, 0.7, and you get picked up no matter what. Like, crazy. But yeah, we aired in April. It was our first upfronts and everything. And then pretty quickly, like while we were editing our final episode, they were like, no, thanks.
Oh. They're like, we're not even going to air the last two episodes. We're going to do back to back Betty White. And we were like, what the fuck? So then anyway, that was a really tough blow. We loved that show more than life itself. We definitely
hit our baby. We hit this before we had babies.
Yeah,
we hit the skids pretty hard. But then we decided to have babies. And in getting pregnant, we came up with this another idea, which was to like, what if best friends had to raise a baby together? And we took it. We actually went into USA to pitch a, could you bring BFF back to life? Mm-hmm. And this guy, Jeff Wachtel, who was the president there, and he's this very special executive who is famous for basically like supporting artists in this really amazing way. But he was there for Monk and Psych and all of these shows that became these cult hits. And he was like, listen, we can't do BFF because that's crazy. That show already didn't work. He's like, but you can do whatever you want.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, write whatever you want and I'll take it. And we said, okay, no, we want to write it and shoot it and then you can decide. So we did it again. We pulled the BFF model off again.
Oh, man.
A little bit more money, right? Well, we didn't want to write him something that he didn't want. You know what I mean? So we wanted to make sure that he was buying into a show that he wanted. So we pitched him the idea, I think, before he ordered a pilot. And then we shot it. Jess was 5 months pregnant secretly.
No, 3 months.
Oh, wow.
3 months. You
5 months when we did the
months.
Photo shoot then, right?
Yeah. So I was getting a little fat. Lennon was way fat.
Huge,
which
but
worked.
I was pregnant in the show.
Right.
So. Yeah, which worked. And then we shot it with this guy, Jeff Blitz, who's a genius director who has directed so many of the offices and he co-created Review with Andy Daly.
Show.
He is one of the most talented and the nicest men. He directed it. Keegan-Michael Key like did us a favor because he wasn't we didn't have someone to play my boyfriend. And I was like, can you just do it for the pilot? Like, and he's like, okay. Like, I think I'm on another show, but okay. And then Zach, did it as a favor to us. None of these people were ever series regulars. The only people that were series regulars were me and Lennon.
Wow. And Bruce, Brad Morris.
Morris. Okay. So yeah, and then that got picked up and we did 12 episodes in season
10,
one?
10.
10. Okay. 10. And it was just, I mean, talk about a dream. It was a dream job, absolute dream job from start to finish.
Were you pregnant too while you shot or you did the pilot and then had a baby and then did the other 9 for the season?
Yeah.
Pilot
had the
pilot, I was pregnant, so was she.
Yeah.
we turned in the pilot. I gave birth. Jess went to Upfronts pregnant, did the red carpet, started the writer's room, Jess still pregnant, me with a 3-month-old.
Wow.
And did the whole writer's room with my newborn and Jess getting ready to give birth. And like 3 weeks before we wrapped the writer's room, Jess had her baby.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then another, yes. And then I think another couple months later, we started shooting.
Wow.
Yeah. I think baby was 10 weeks old when we started shooting.
Wow.
Yeah. So then but it was a magical time because we got to have the babies there with us. And mm-hmm. it was like, we'd always dreamed of being in a position where we had our own show before we had children so they could be along for the ride. And they really were.
That's amazing.
So that was cool. Then the second season, they halved our budget because USA started dismantling their comedy. They said they were going to do comedies and then immediately said, no, we're not. And we were the only one left on the air.
Oh,
so
awesome.
They said, you can do the second season, but we're going to give you half the budget. And of course we're like, okay, we can make it work. Like, you know, UCB, you know, that's like how you do it.
Right.
So that was a really difficult season because we had to go all on location and it was very, very hot in Pasadena and we were shooting many, many hours and our kids were older then and it was harder to be shooting that much and et cetera. But we delivered this season we really loved. And then right after that season, I found out I had breast cancer because I was not feeling well during that shoot at all. I was like, something's off, you know? And I say it was the triple pair of Spanx I wore just to keep myself slim that might have brought it on. But so then we were like, oh shit, like, is this show ever even going to come back? So I hid the fact that I was sick because I didn't want that to affect anything.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, they didn't know whether they were like, we don't know if we want to pick it back up. And we pitched it to Netflix and they were like, we don't really want it. And I was like, that's cool. I have cancer. Like, this is great.
You didn't open with that when you,
I didn't open, but I remember just being the whole time, like, if you ever want to feel existential dread, like pitch when you know you're about to have a double mastectomy, I was like, this is the worst day of my
Literally,
life.
We pitched season 3 the day before her double mastectomy.
Oh,
it is true. It was so weird.
I
would not recommend.
Good to know. I will say, and I was going to say this for the end, but my wife is a 2-time cancer survivor, breast cancer survivor.
Oh my gosh. God bless.
And, yeah. Thank you. And we watched those episodes and we were like, oh, this is the only time we've seen what it's like on TV. Cause she went through the same thing as the gummy bears. And we had, she did the cold cap. We even, I may edit this out, but I had a fight with my mother-in-law over her nipples about keeping them.
I hope you keep that.
Nipples
were so important.
It was
so important.
And I, you know, what you guys did really well with that, I mean, especially as a caregiver, that scene, you know, with Keegan-Michael Key outside where you're just like, you know what, I need to do all these things, you know, that was dead on. And then the episode where you're like, where everybody's like, hey, are you okay? You know, that is so real.
So real. I'm so glad because there wasn't anything for me to watch. There really wasn't. Like, people kept sending me links like, hey, did you hear Drew Barrymore did a movie about breast cancer? And I was like, whoever sent this to me, she dies in it. Tony dies. Like, what are you doing? Like, there isn't enough stories of survival that are just like your wife. Like, it is okay. They can fix it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, and you're in need of that. I felt if I had found our show, it would have been a happy, you know, thing because you just can't find it.
Well, we found it, so thank you. It was very helpful for us. It was very helpful, you know, because it was, you know, either the shows are like the monologue where the person is like, and I just want you to know that I did, you know, and then it'll be like, give my daughter the shot. That's like the only two options you have. And you're just like, I want the one where, like, you know, it's just, it's a real pain in the ass, you know,
that's right.
That was the show we wanted to watch. And so thank you for that.
Well, you know, it's, well, what was weird is when it happened, when I first got the diagnosis, like Lennon was with me because my husband was in New York at the time. Cause like an idiot, I'd been like, no, please stay. I don't need you home when I get this call. Yeah. And he was like, okay. But I remember from the very beginning, these weirdly funny things were happening. And I was like, we have to write about this. I think did I say that to you in the office, Lynn? To myself, I was like, we got to write about this. And so I was like, well, we have to write the season. I knew that even though it made no sense, the show would come back. I felt like I needed this story. We both felt like the story needed to be told. Mm-hmm. And then it was so effortless when we were writing that season in terms of coming up with the arc of it. It is its own arc, you know? I mean, the actual like improvising of it and writing of it was quite painful, but also very healing. There are a few things in life, I feel like, as artists where you're like, this is meant to be, it's meant to happen. So that was a really beautiful, I wish the show continued 11 more seasons, and I still hold out hope when the phone rings that it's Netflix and Lennon's like, you gotta let it go. Like, you got to let it go.
They're rebooting everything, you guys. I mean, I hear Frasier's coming back, so you never know. That's what I heard. I don't know. I heard that.
I don't want to see that.
I don't mind. Yeah, I'd like to see Roz.
Oh yeah, Roz is great. You're such a Roz, Lennon. You're just waiting for that Roz role.
I just loved her.
Yeah.
You guys, I have a couple quick questions and then, I guess one of my questions I want to know was like, what in your mind made a good episode? You know, like, how did you, like, I'm sure, you know, you have the writer's room and people are pitching and doing their thing, but how did you say like, yeah, we want to do that. We don't want to do that. Like what made the green light happen?
Well, two things come to mind. One was like, whatever they do, it has to happen out of love. Like, I don't want to see them hurting each other on purpose. Like, that's not what real women friends do. The way they piss each other off is by caring too much, like getting involved or crossing boundaries or whatever. So like, that was like, it's a misunderstanding. Like, the comedy had to come, like, it had to be believable and connected to reality and also come out of love. And then the second thing is that we also kind of had dreams that we wanted to happen. Like, I am obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race. And I was like, I want to see them. I want to meet drag queens during the show. Like, let's write an episode with drag queens. And so we ended up performing as Tina Turner drag queens next to like Bob the drag queen and Katya and Jiggly Caliente, you know? And it was amazing. It was amazing.
I wanted to have
some of the other things. Like, so we had a self-defense episode, which I was, that came out of my real life. I was obsessed with the self-defense teacher.
I desperately wanted Lennon to be in a sex fantasy sequence with the Property Brothers.
I actually had a dream about them for real though. Didn't I? I don't know. You? Maybe not. But then Jess was like, we're going to make it happen. I was like, in what reality would we actually see it? Like, we've never done a flashback. We've never done cut to or whatever. But then when they were like, we could do it as the tag, like,
it was the best. Like, Lennon as Stevie Nicks. And then like Kenny Loggins, you know, singing with Kenny. Yeah.
That was based on reality. Me and my best friend, Leslie, went to a Kenny Loggins concert in Long Island. It was insane. He like came out and sang. Like, it was so insane.
Wait, so what part, I mean, he came out and sang to you, or you just sneak in?
Well, we have a special obsession with Kenny Loggins, but then also, we were like the youngest people there, which was super weird. And then he came into the audience to sing Celebrate Me Home. And because we were the only people standing up screaming, he came into the audience and stood on chairs right in front of us and like did a whole solo. And we were like crying. It was before cell phones, so it was like recorded on her Canon, you know, camera.
Right.
Anyway, it was weird and magical.
That's
so
amazing.
So like the concert of it all, you know.
Well, I was going to ask a little bit of Kenny Loggins. How fun and weird was it to have Kenny Loggins just be right there to sing to you? Because I'm putting this on myself. I get very uncomfortable when people sing right at me, but...
Interesting.
That's my own stuff to work out. That's, you know, whatever, but...
Well, that's why I hate karaoke. I'm like, why are you forcing me to watch you sing? I don't want to do this right now.
Like, that favorite thing in the whole world.
But Lennon loves it.
I do like karaoke, but I don't like it. It's the proximity thing.
Well, the interesting thing about... Well, first of all, our director thought it would be hilarious if Kenny met us for the first time in real life dressed up as Bo Cephas and Jan Dana, and I
was very
that
weird.
Wasn't a great idea.
No,
it was so weird.
It
so
was
we rehearsed
so weird.
The scene like of him coming in and busting us, like sneaking into his dressing room. But the part where we were like in the tour bus, like singing Celebrate Me Home with him, which for us was our very first episode, it was in the pilot, so it felt very like sentimental. And then he learned it because it's a piano song. So he had to learn it on the guitar because he doesn't ever play it on the guitar because it's not a guitar song. So he learned it on guitar. And then when we all started singing in the round, like the tears are real.
Yeah.
They were happening during the rehearsal. But also he kept saying to me, "Wow, that's so authentic."
He kept saying
I was singing like the low, like the black part.
Oh,
you're
like, oh,
I'm bound to roll, and I'm bound to roll.
That's so authentic. No, but it was like, you know, there were never moments. I think in a lot of shows, your heart gets broken because you're like, oh, I got to work with my, like, you know, my hero. And then they ended up being a dick. You know, it was like, we would swing for the fences, like right to Kenny Loggins. And not only would he say yes, but he would show up and be the kindest man alive a true artist. Or like Jane Katzmarek, who was busy making $1 billion an episode. We wrote her, we were like, we have $10 to give you.
Wow.
But you are our dream, you know, to play my mother. And she was like, absolutely, I'll do it. And then she became such a mother figure to us, you know, personally. We still call on her.
Oh, that's amazing.
Lori Metcalf? Like, she shows up and transforms herself into my surgeon. Like, Michaela, I mean, it was just everybody. Lindsay Sloan is one of our best friends. Zach, it was such a special. I'll never let it go. Jack McGrair as a fucking UPS delivery man.
Well, I was going to say, you know, and this last thing I'll say, you know, what's amazing about the show is everybody feels like they're in on it. Like, I don't want to say in on the joke, but like Jane Kaczmarek in particular, she feels like she's been in there since day one, you know, from the first episode she shows up. And so, is that her? Is that you guys? Is that just, you know, kismet?
I think because we came up through an improv theater where we're writing sketch for people or improvising and getting to know, like, some of the people we've been playing with or performing with for years. And so when we write it, we pick them. We pick that person, whoever it is, whoever's our dream person, and we write it with them in mind, right?
Right.
And so I feel like by the time it gets into their mouth, they're like, it just feels right because we're kind of channeling them when we write, and then they take it to the next level, you know,
right?
They're all incredible improvisers and stuff, you know.
But it's like we've been performing with these people for 20 years, so by the if we're gonna write a part for Rob Riggle, we know exactly what to write for him that you know what I mean, just like
something demure and very calm.
Oh yeah, something where he's using like a pipe as a gigantic dong, like, you know, like and like soldering it, you know. But that was one of the great joys, was watching our friends come on as these guest stars and like just making us laugh so hard. I mean, it just, I honestly, every week was a true, true dream.
Lauren Weedman, yeah, too. Like, she was one of those people who, like, so we wrote it, we wrote the part, and then we, like, she came to mind and we kind of rewrote it with her in mind. And then when she got there, she made it so much better than we could have ever dreamed of. Like,
that's awesome.
She's so talented and beautiful and, like, raw and weird. And, like, it was such a joy to see and to behold. So
the one other thing I'll say that I thought was really interesting was, like, we wrote two characters thinking they would be villains. And that was Bruce, Brad Morris's character, was supposed to be this ex-husband. You never wanted to see him again. You were supposed to, like, literally he disappears. And then Lindsay Sloan's character, Bird Bones, was supposed to be this horrible bitch that we'd be excited for him to get divorced. Mm-hmm. Both of them are such charming and wonderful improvisers and heartwarming people that everyone was like, I'm Team Bird Bones. Oh my God, Bruce is so cute. And we were like, these fuckers now got to stay around in the show. So that was really wonderful to see how, like, these characters changed in because of the people we put in the role, you know?
That's really interesting. Because they definitely obviously are the foils to your characters, but they don't, like, they're not evil villains, you know what I mean?
No,
so it's interesting to, you know, like, there's the part of the pilot where he's like, trying to get the German woman to...
stuff up his butt!
Yeah, and you're like... It's not great, but also okay. You know, he's working some stuff out. All right. You know, that's his thing.
He's working some stuff out. He doesn't mean yet. And just the same, they don't mean to be bad. They don't mean to be annoying. They don't. Right. And everybody also, I remember, like, people saying, well, in sitcoms, nobody ever changes or grows. And in our show, we always wanted in a season, we would start to say, okay, our characters start here, but what do they learn and change and grow to end up in a different place? That was something we always wanted to happen. And then, of course, in season three, it was like, wow, we have this monumental way we all change and grow and get better and closer. Yeah. So, but yeah.
Well, you guys, it was, it all shines through. I'm just going to suck up to you guys since you're here, but no, it really does. I mean, it's one of the reasons, like, I enjoyed it as comfort food, because it was, especially in a pandemic where you're like, you're not around as many of your friends as you want.
Yeah.
So you're like, watch people be friends together and live vicariously through them. So, thank you so much. This was great. I really appreciate it.
I'm now renewed pissed, and so I'm going to call up the general number at Netflix and see why they won't bring it back.
If you want to use my name, I don't know anybody there, but if you just need one person to say, hey, we got this
That's
one guy.
That's how it works. That's how Montclair. It works. Just call the general number.
There's a dad in Montclair that really wants
he
to see
really
another
wants
season.
It. Yeah.
Could you do him a solid?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, you guys. Real quick, is there anything that are you working on anything? Do you want to talk about anything?
Come on, man.
Give me a break.
It's a pandemic.
You can find me posting very rarely on.
We are going to have another Womp It Up.
I was going to ask you about that.
People keep asking, and I just keep clicking like, and then I'm like, oh, fuck, we got to actually do that. So, yeah, we're going to do that.
I had to take a trip to Vermont and listen. And I just, you know, I put it on and just let it loop for a while. So it was great. Love it. Awesome. Well, thank you, guys.
Do we want to talk about, because we haven't really talked about the setup for this show.
Yes.
And I don't know if we want to jump into the pilot because it's all there.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Makes
so
sense.
So the first episode we watched is season one, episode one, pilot, directed by Jeffrey Blitz, written by Lennon Parnham and Jessica St. Clair. Original air date, April 29th, 2014. Emma returns home for her best friend Maggie's baby shower. This is the synopsis. So.
Oh, really? That's just a one-liner? It's just that one-liner?
I mean, look, I get these off IMDb. They're not over.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lie
about
that.
Cool. It's cool, dude. It's cool.
I'm just saying.
Listen, bro.
I'm just saying.
You guys make me edit and produce a lot.
Look, And those are filled in by like people, just random people on IMDb. So blame film lover 69 or whatever, whoever wrote that.
Hey, that's my mom's user handle.
Yes.
Anyway, so yeah, so obviously Jessica St. Clair is living and working in China, comes home for her friend's baby shower. Her friend Maggie, who's played by Lana Parnham, her husband's doing weird sex stuff online.
Are you doing this off the top of your head right now?
Yes.
There. Yes.
Boom.
And then they're gonna get divorced, and then Emma's gonna stay in America and help raise the baby with her best friend.
Perfect.
There.
Yeah.
There that's what we wanted the first time, Dan.
Look, blame the IMDb.
You know what, Michelle? We'll bring it up at the meeting we have with him after every episode, the meeting we have with Dan.
Film Lover 69, you suck.
Come on, Film Lover 69. Meanwhile, his account of Big Mama's house is step by step.
Yeah. I don't know it's the same Big Mama's house that I've seen. But anyway.
What's happening?
I don't know. The pilot is great. It does everything a pilot needs to do because it sets up an awful lot in an episode.
Also, it just establishes immediately their love of Kenny.
Jessica St. Clair is like a fireball force from like the first second she's on screen, which is really kind of awesome.
Yeah.
But the dynamic with her and Lennon is great immediately. Zach Woods, I thought he was going to be pining away after Jessica based on the pilot, but then I realized, no, he's just like this weird, because doesn't he like hit on her or something immediately? Am I wrong?
I think he mentions that he had a crush on her.
That's what it is. It's probably just reference. I assume that was probably going to be a major plot point. It wasn't.
Here's why. She says, after the way you hit on me during high school, I know you're not gay, but what you did to set up this... that's
right. Right. But he kisses her later on. That's the other thing. He kisses her at the end.
Maybe.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
At the end of the pilot on that. Oh, by the way, that more minor character, I think it's like an older Indian man. Really funny.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think he just died this year, actually.
Oh.
Oh, God. And I was going to have...
Wait, 2020 or 2021?
2020.
Yep.
He's the guy in 40-Year-Old Virgin who he's one of my favorite lines of that movie. He's like, once I take out my knife, it doesn't go back in till it sees blood. So good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Any thoughts? Any other thoughts? I mean, I thought that obviously their interactions and their chemistry was the best part.
They're singing harmony.
This episode.
Yeah. Mwah. I mean, not harmony, but taking it apart.
It really does remind me of watching two friends who have been friends for 50,000 years.
That's
go ahead.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that I really like. Is one is that like you don't feel like everybody met for the first time that day.
Definitely.
You know, there's not a sense of like, welcome to the news station. Here's everyone you're going to meet. Like everybody knows everyone and has an established rapport with everyone, which is great. I love that it's not a big city gal comes back home to small town and can't adjust. Mm-hmm. Like it's not Northern
it's
exposure.
It's not Hallmark.
No.
It's not Hallmark. Yeah. You know, it is just, you know, there is a little bit of like, oh, I can't believe I'm back here, but it's not, that's not the main focus, which is great.
It doesn't talk down to the small town.
She's from there, right? But it's, a lot of times, and I'm trying to think of a show that does this.
Northern Exposure does it very well.
Yeah, like, yeah, but there's like a lot of times when you...
he's not from there.
Yeah. But when you have that person coming, like Sweet Home Alabama.
I almost said that. And then I was like, well, it's a movie, but it's exactly that. Like, she's outgrown where she came from, right?
Right. But in that movie, you know, there's stuff like, oh, ew, you're a small town. And it's not that, which is great. Yeah. I like that she's just kind of like, I left. I mean, it's really because she left the boyfriend, but it's also there's not like a talking down to the town, which
and her mom too. That relationship is really great.
Yeah.
And actually,
is that the same one? That's in the pilot.
That's the second episode.
Okay, I want to back for one second. I said that they didn't kiss in the first episode, and Stan was right. They did. Okay.
Yeah, he kind of grabs her on the street at the end, and anyway.
Oh, that's right. That's because they're like kiss.
Yes,
and he's like, "Well, somebody had a kiss." So
give the people what
that's
they
right.
want.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
And
that's right.
Sort of to Luke's point, it's almost like vehemently not the big town back, because I think Jessica St. Clair's Emma says something about people eating ice cream cones, and I think they end that episode eating ice cream cones, walking down the street. So like, it's clear like we know who these people are. Like she's already absorbed back in.
Yeah.
I also was impressed with, like, we catch the husband cheating, and that's not, like, he's not thrown out on his ear and you never see him again, because that's not real life either. Like,
and they have a kid.
They have a kid. Like, you have to deal with that. You know what I mean? And so he's not just, like, he's not just the spark for Emma coming back. He's, like, there's still a relationship there.
Yeah, no. and I do love when he calls the woman the second time, and because he's helping her with her album, and he's like, spend the money for an engineer because sound quality makes a difference.
Yeah,
that was funny. That was funny. I mean, I have two. Okay, I have an observation and a criticism.
Oh, oh boy! It's of us.
The observation was just, and this is not the fault of the show, but it felt very 2014 in that. One, they were like, isn't like internet sexting weird? Like felt a very like, you know, current thing. And then also they were like, isn't like video conferencing? Like that's
right.
You can talk to people in China. That's and you would be like in your bedroom at night. Yeah. That'd be so weird. Yeah. Anyway, I only say it because we've all lived on Zoom calls for the last year.
Yeah. I was gonna say. Now it's kind of like breathing. You're like,
Yeah, and I thought all the comedy and the you know, the interactions between the characters were great. And I did love, like you said, like they just kind of started media res. Like I didn't know who Zach Woods was. At least maybe I missed a line, but I did not realize that he's supposed to be Lemon's brother.
Yeah.
You missed a line because it was.
I don't know who he was. It was
it like on the first line, and then they.
She does
just,
okay.
It's just assumed.
It was the husband who says it. Wait till you see what your brother did.
Yeah.
And
you guys, I saw that twice. I just want you to know that's why I'm so. I saw this twice.
But I actually like that because, like, in a lesser pilot, they like would inexplicably explain that.
Yeah.
The brother, even though everyone would know who that is, obviously. Right. So I did kind of like they were just like, you know, you'll figure it out. I mean, the only thing I needed in the pilot was a little bit more of like, so she like Jessica St. Clair like leaves her entire life.
Yeah.
To like, and I need a little bit more of like being clear how much she hated her job.
Yeah.
In China, you know what I mean? Like she just was like in that last scene, she was like, yeah, okay, I'll just stay and raise this child with you, which I know they're best friends and everything. I have I have many very close friends. I would not give up my entire life to raise their child with them. Maybe that makes me a bad friend. I don't know. But I just need a little bit more. And the same thing with the husband, like, you know, it felt a little quick where, like, I was like, I don't know if that's something to divorce him over, maybe something to, like, go and, you know, be separated or
well,
go to therapy over.
Well, she does say that they've had a bad run prior to that. Maybe this was a last straw situation.
And that's the thing. I needed a little bit more of that because it just felt like she said things have been bad for a while, and I was like, oh, they have been?
Yeah,
it was not clear until the moment she said that.
That's, I think, Dan, because I think about that stuff a lot, especially in a pilot, and it's like there's so fucking much you have to cram in, you know? Yeah. Like, that I feel like it's almost impossible to appease every Dan. No,
I agree.
I'm totally busting your chops. But that's sort of where my mind went. It's like you could probably dip down one or two avenues a little bit, but maybe you. I just don't know if it's possible. Maybe it is. I don't know.
And but another thing, Dan.
No, I mean it is. It is possible, but I mean it's really hard.
Yeah,
it's really hard to write a pilot. There's no question about it.
With this show, you know, I think makes a choice. That says like, hey, we're gonna deal with some heavy stuff, but we're not gonna deep dive into it. You know, with a lot of stuff, and I think that is one of those things where, as a viewer, you're like, you're either in it or you're not, because like, you know, yeah, they don't really get into the nuances of her of like Lennon's marriage or Jessica's career or even the episode where. Skipping ahead a bit, where like we find out she has cancer, is only dealt with in two episodes. it could have gone either way. I kind of liked, yeah, I mean, there's definitely something missing, but then you kind of, sorry, this is a tangential thing, actually, because I was watching Sharkboy versus Lava Girl, or Sharkboy and Lava Girl yesterday, which is terrible. And, oh, it's so weird. It's so weird, but nothing is justified. But it moves so quickly that you're kind of like, oh, okay. And so there's a little bit of that in this too, where like not everything is justified, but it moves so quickly and the banter starts. Guys, I love banter. So that you kind of just, when you take a moment to sit back, like you're saying, Dan, and go like, wait, she left all of this behind?
Right.
What?
Right.
You know, so. By the way, let's talk about Sharkboy and Lava Girl for another hour.
I have to say, probably my biggest laugh of the pilot was when she's late for her 3 a.m. call. And then she's very frazzled. And then they cut to like the, you know, the Japanese businessman who maybe Chinese. I apologize. Chinese. He talks about how his father had started the company, etc. And they cut back and she's sleeping.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't admit this out loud. I work for a company that's based in Sydney, Australia. I have been on those 3 o'clock calls and I have. Maybe not fall asleep, but real close.
Yeah, real close. I don't doubt it.
Especially when the client's just kind of droning on and on. I'm just being like, I gotta stay up. So I felt that very much.
And also it came after a heavy day of travel and being with her friend. It makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
But I just thought it was funny.
She almost saw a woman put a can up her ass. So, what a day.
What a day.
That was, that bit was good because, like, you also, I will say, streaming stuff to TV, you got to be careful, you guys. Yeah. I'm not talking about personal. I'm just saying that.
No.
I have accidentally streamed things to my TV that I had not meant to. And I was just like, oh, thank God that was just some random thing that wasn't anything embarrassing. Yeah.
Because, it can happen. We were going to stream the show playing TV to our, playing house to our TV, but we couldn't find the wire and we were like, fuck it, we'll just watch it on our little computers.
Yeah,
that could have been us.
Yeah, it could happen.
I was talking to somebody yesterday about how they were talking about how like Marco Polo, do you know Marco Polo the app? It's like a video messaging for those that don't know, it's a video messaging app and it scrolls through automatically all of your video messages. And then when it's done, it goes back to your face because you're like looking at it. And so they're saying that like they've used it in the bathroom and then you're watching. And all of a sudden it's just your face. You're watching yourself in the bathroom. You're like, oh, my God. And the same thing, like I've been in the bathroom on Instagram and you're flipping through and flipping through. And then you accidentally flip the wrong way. And it's like on stories.
That's
and you're like,
my penis.
Absolutely.
That is my biggest fear, is that I'm going to stream my penis on TV.
I thought your penis was your biggest fear.
How many does he have if he has a biggest?
Yeah.
But I also have a thing where my phone was connected by Bluetooth to my wife's car. So I would be listening to a podcast and my wife would go to leave for work. And would turn the car on, and then my podcast would start playing in her car.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, wait, why did it stop playing? Yeah. Anyway, again, thankfully, listening, nothing, you know, she would just hear my stupid sports podcast for 2 minutes. But what if I was doing something, you know, I didn't want to know about?
Dan, what would be an example of that?
I mean, someone putting something up their ass. I mean, that could happen. I'm just saying.
That you're listening to on a podcast.
Sure.
Ooh, look,
you listen to that podcast.
Here, it's like the sound of the pop of the crescent roll tin.
Sure.
It's called the can.
Anyway,
it's called In the Can, the podcast. And that's In the Can.
Yep. Join us next week.
Jonah quit.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Casper Mattress.
yes.
So the next episode was season 1, episode 3, Unfinished Business, directed by Fred Savage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Written by Joe Wenger. Original air date, May 6, 2014. Maggie and Mark investigate Bruce's sudden disappearence. Emma reunites with her estranged mother, Gwen.
The Jane Kaczmarek chef's kiss to her.
So funny.
She's great. Just... Again, you know, it's so hard. I think we talked definitely about this on other shows where, you know, like the Strangers with Candy episode where like some people were on it and they got the joke and some people were just like, okay. Mm-hmm. And she gets the joke. Like she's in on it. She, you know, I love the reverse thing where it's like usually you're hiding from the character's hiding from their parents. They don't want anyone to know. And then the mother sees her and she starts hiding.
Yes.
And
so good.
I love the philosophy because I really believe it's true that you want to not talk to your mom or whoever, but you want them to talk to you because we're all egomaniacs.
Right.
That's an absolutely valid feeling.
Yeah. I did laugh out loud when she was Felicia Rashad.
Yeah. Well, the other, this is 2014, is that you could just casually mention Bill Cosby in a show.
Yeah.
That was the only thing I was like, oh, okay, this must have been before all that.
Before the storm.
But yeah. I love, she's like, but she spelled it with a PH? She's like, yes. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, very funny.
It's good, yeah.
It was also nice to see Jane as a classy dame as opposed to how she is in, God, she's so good. Where is she? Like, why isn't she the most famous person on the planet?
Bradley Whitford.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Motherfucker.
Yes, literally.
Yours?
You know what? I'm going to,
what? They have kids?
I'm going to look her up because I feel like she's probably on, she's been on some show for like 12 years and we've never heard of. Okay.
She shows up on The Simpsons once in a while as like the angry judge, which I also think is like, again, it's the same character. It's just like she plays angry very well.
Yeah,
she's so good at it. Who cares?
No, she's been guest starring a lot of stuff lately, but nothing. Well,
I guess it's time for us to write that pilot.
That's
for
right.
Jane.
Yeah,
yeah. It's called In the Can, and it's about.
See, I went the opposite way. I'm going Jane the Virgin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. That's
wow. Okay.
This episode I had said earlier is probably my favorite of the three we reviewed or watched or whatever. Any type of poetry and wordplay and stuff, like, I'm just in. I love that stuff. I love it. I felt like that was a real great opportunity for Zach Woods to shine as well.
Yeah.
To sort of, like, you know, be the wrangler of that particular group.
He looks like a poet.
Yeah. Doesn't he wear a turtleneck at some point?
He wears the black.
I think he wears scarves, like a scarf kind of thing. I think.
Am I wrong? No. He wore an all black uniform outfit.
I feel like he might have.
Turtleneck.
Was that him? Was this show?
It's a party you saw him at once, Luke.
But I mean, no one plays like a strangely aggressive weirdo better than Zach. Like,
nobody.
Anytime he like has to like scold someone about like, no, these are the rules of our poet troupe or whatever. Like, he is so good at that. It's always so funny.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Like, nobody has less power. He's like, he's so powerless, but it doesn't stop him from feeling empowered.
No.
He was our, I'm sure everybody had him as their, coach for a show we called Pygmy Marmalade. Pygmy Marmalade.
Real Pygmy Marmalade.
He is so not that guy. Like, he's just so, he has a quiet authority, and he's really a great coach. There, I've said.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a great acting thing. Like, it's just, no,
yeah.
I'm just, yay, your acting chops is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Exactly.
I know him super, super minorly, but I do have to say, in all of the improv land, he is one of the best guys I think I have ever met.
Yes.
Mm. He's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
Oh, Luke looks like he has something to say about that.
No, I just had a little guess. He's great. I don't know. I've never met him. I worked on Project Improviser, and he was the guest coach for a couple episodes. But I never interacted with him, and he was great. He was really great.
I just want to say that I was in a show with Zach, an improv show at UCB, with Zach and the writer of this episode, Joe Wengert.
Yes.
And the only thing I got to say is, guys, you didn't want to call me? Did you lose my phone number? What happened?
I
just wish there was a producer's take in poetry in that episode. I think that's what was missing.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I could have snapped in the back. A line or two.
Speaking of nice guys, I know that now we're just like talking people
and
we
then
know.
That guy
Joe Wenger, awesome dude. Anyway.
Yeah. Good guy. All right.
And look how famous we are. Okay.
Yeah, look at us. Yeah. We're doing it.
Look at how famous we know.
Yeah. That's the name of our next podcast.
I mean, I a lot of the people that I knew, like Nicole Byer, I was on a team with for 2 years. I'm just so excited that
she's so great.
Just every time someone I knew becomes famous, yeah. I'm just like, I'm gonna blow my kids' minds.
Yeah,
I'd be like, oh, Nicole, oh, that super famous person, yeah, I knew her. Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, she likes my tweets sometimes. So let's not make a big deal about it, guys. I'm just saying. Anyway,
NBD.
When you get the retweet, Dan, then let's talk.
Oh yeah, no. So the next episode was season 2, episode 8, Celebrate Me Scones, directed by Stuart McDonald.
So stupid.
Written by Elena Parnum and Jessica St. Clair. First air date September 8th, 2015. Maggie surprises Emma with concert tickets, an old friend rises from the ashes, is what Film Lover 69 had to say.
Yeah. Guys, actually, that's Roger Ebert. He died.
From the ashes, literally.
It was his last review.
He was born in 1969. What is...
I don't understand what Rob is.
Wait, he's 2 years older than
that's
me.
Not... Yeah. No, he was much older than that. Anyway, I mean, the only thing I will say about this is I don't know the man personally, but Kenny Loggins was also on an episode of Archer. A very famous episode of Archer. And I always assume that a celebrity is a pretty nice person when they are willing to go on a TV show, play themselves, and be a douchebag, as he did on Archer. Yeah. So, and he also seemed like he was very game on this show. So,
yeah.
I'm just saying, Kenny Loggins seems like a good guy. Yeah. That's all.
Also, he writes some of the best songs. I love Pooh Corner. I loved the joke, Pooh Corner, too.
I was just going to say that was such a great... So the fact that, first of all, they had candy snacks. Which, or Caddy Snacks.
Caddy Snacks. They're all right.
Yeah. Because it was a throwaway line, too. Like, oh, just bring it in there. Kenny really needs to have pun-based snacks before he goes on. And then the bathroom was called Poo Corner.
I've not been that happy since COVID began.
I just giggled incessantly. It was obviously Celebrate Me Scones, and then I can't think of any of that.
Oh shit, I should have written them down. Yeah, because there was like basically every song.
There's like 10 of them.
I mean, it was like it was Antonia Loggins.
Yep.
That was what kicked us off.
Yeah.
So dumb.
And the dressing room was labeled "This Is It," which is one of his songs. Which is good.
Yes, and the woman that they bought tickets from was Joanna Wilcall, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Stephanie Weir is just pretty much the most amazing actress. She's so funny. And like the rude gesture she makes right before she drives off. She's just plays disgusting pretty damn good.
Yeah. That was amazing disgusting.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know women like that. I am women like that.
Yes.
So many big gulps.
Yes.
So many big gulps.
This episode probably is the epitome of the point I keep trying to hammer. It's just people having fun and doing exactly the fun thing they want to do, you know? Yeah.
I think that's, you know, there are some shows, especially with sitcoms, and I think because we were talking about Superstore before, it's like, there's this intangible thing with some shows that you attach yourself to. And I think for me, it's the fact that they just look like they're having fun, mm-hmm. that they're just turning the camera on and having a good time that I think I did this off mic, but like the comparison to like New Girl was that too looks like they're all just having a great time. Mm-hmm. Like they're all having so much fun being goofballs and having a moment. I mean, like and I'm sure they're all improvised, but you know, stuff like I get cookie, give you cookie. You give me cookie, I give
cookie,
you cookie.
Cookie.
Hey, give me cookie. You know, like stuff like that is just amazing. And so that's all.
You know, and I wonder, you know, as I think about New Girl and Playing House, I wonder if a piece of it is because it feels like everybody's unequal. Like it doesn't feel like there's a star and then a second tier and then a third tier. Yeah. It feels like everybody's allowed to play.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what, we're going to talk about New Girl for just a second. I think what was so graceful about Zooey Deschanel is that she realized that she was like, this is an ensemble and I'm okay with that. Yeah. And I'm done with New Girl. It is the best sitcom that's ever been done. But now back to Plain House.
That's how it's like, New Girl.
That's it. That was it. That but was you're it, right. Yeah. Like, they are an ensemble. Like, they, across the board, and are equal.
You know, it's funny, Luke, that you talk about, like, seamless integration, which is also the name of my biography. I don't know why. But, like, when I was watching the episodes that we picked, a little part of me was like, Keegan-Michael Key is just so damn talented. I feel like there's a little more he can do. But then there was an episode called Officer of the Year where, like, he does get to show himself a little more.
Yeah.
I just knowing how uber talented the guy was, I was like, I hope for a little bit more, you know? Yeah. But it does look like he did get his spots.
There's like such little like bantery moments with him that I think are great, where he's like in the pilot, you know, Emma's on the porch and he shows up and that's where they see each other for the first time. And he's like, oh, I got a call, you know, that somebody was lurking out here, a broad-shouldered. She's like, I don't
in a blazer.
In a blazer, yeah. And then there's just a moment where she's like, I'm going to call the real police. He's like, you know who you're going to call? Watch this. Ring, ring. Hello. Hi, me.
Yeah.
You know,
and that was
just
good.
I like that.
And he plays real so well. We're going to talk about it later, but the breast cancer episode.
Yeah.
He's so grounded and so there. He is incredible. Yeah. And shout out to Aaron.
Aaron.
Oh my gosh, that might be my favorite. That and also Liam Neeson's.
And the Bruce Willis.
I could have a podcast dedicated to him. I think he's the nicest person on the planet. He's been on the show, Jenny's show, a few times, and every time, the nicest human.
I think we should start a podcast called Keys to the Castle, and we'll just all about Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah,
because he owns a castle, right?
He does.
Oh, I thought we would bring in that television show Castle.
Yeah,
and just have
we'll bring Keegan-Michael Key and Nathan Fillion together.
Yeah,
that would be Keys to the Castle.
I am going to start one called Into the Woods, and it's going to be about how great Zach Woods is.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, these podcasts.
Yep, so many
of
them.
We have a network now.
Yes.
Okay, let's back to the show. Come on.
We can move on to the next episode. I just wanted to say quickly that I looked it up. I'm All Rice. Meets Me Halfway, which is a bunch of meat. Foot Juice. Was one of them. And also that, as I'm watching the video, I forgot that Leonard is drinking the foot juice.
Yeah.
And Jessica is, I don't know, I'm sorry. I don't know their character names. But anyway, Jessica Clare is like doing it. She's like videotaping her with her phone. She's like, oh man, they're going to love this. They're going to love this. And she goes, who's going to love it? I don't know.
It's very funny. Really fun. They are really, really fun. Yeah. It's just fun.
Yeah.
So the next episode was season 3, episode 5, You Want to Roll with This, directed by Jeffrey Blitz, written by Lennon Barnum and Jessica St. Clair, original air date July 7th, 2017. Maggie and Emma face their biggest challenge yet. Mm-hmm. Mark sends backup. It's a synopsis. So, does anyone discuss what actually happens?
Yeah, so, I don't know if you guys watched the one previous, but Maggie is training to be a nurse, and so she agrees to Emma agrees to a breast exam with this doctor, you know, because she hasn't done it in a while, and they find a lump. And Jeff Hiller, our friend of the show,
doctor?
Yes,
that she later dates?
Yes.
Okay.
Jeff Hiller plays a nurse in that episode, I believe.
He's the best.
This one particularly hit home, and I wanted to talk about it because I just really want an excuse to watch it again. But for those that don't know, my wife is a 2-time breast cancer survivor. And I don't know if you've ever watched shows that deal with cancer, but it treats it like it's going to be, it's a death sentence, or that it's like, Everybody's crying. There's always rain. It's always some sort of punishment for your bad deeds or something mm-hmm. good's happening that, you know, and life isn't like that at all. And it's a lot closer. This episode in particular felt like they had a camera on us when we were going through it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's an oncologist. Michelle had the exact same surgery. It was a double mastectomy with a reconstruction, and the one doctor scooped her out and the other doctor put him back in, and we got to choose her boobs, and coincidentally she has the same kind, the gummy bears. What struck me particularly about this was actually the Keegan-Michael Key character, where you just have that thing where you're like, I want to run a background check on everybody in the mm-hmm. hospital to make sure everything is okay, and blah, blah, blah. And you just feel that kind of helplessness, but you don't feel like I love that no one launched into a monologue like it was Grey's Anatomy mm-hmm. or right. that nobody was the Shirley MacLaine, give my daughter the shot. Like, it was just, you know, what you do, you know, and, when you deal with stuff like this or infertility or stuff where your life is happening on screen, a lot of times you're kind of like, oh, you couldn't make one phone call to somebody that's actually going through it and like
right.
do it with a little bit of accuracy, like a hint. Mm-hmm. But this was the opposite. This was done like right on the money.
Well, Jessica had just had gone through it literally like that. The 6 months before, so and as women, we're often written by other people, by men mm-hmm. rather, So it really was a refreshing look at what we're actually feeling as opposed to what you guys think we're feeling. So I 100% agree, especially about the nipple. Like I was just like, oh fuck yeah, I'd totally like. The whole thing sucks. My aunt has had a double mastectomy. My sister, like, it's in our family, my family. And I have always thought, you know, if that happens, I cannot wait to get new tits. Like, that is, I know how terrible it'll be, but it's a possibility, definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm a doomsdayer by nature. So, like, I've already picked them out. Mm-hmm. And that was the moment when I was just like, that's okay, I can get through that. So as a woman, that's my perspective.
Yep.
And you're welcome to write it differently.
And that's what's nice about it is that it is done with humor, but with love and with sincerity,
with honesty.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for.
I love the part where Lennon's character says, like, that's why I went like at 9:45 and paid $70, because that's something she can control because of how helpless you feel.
Yeah.
It's like, this is one thing I can be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
This got heavy.
I know. That's the other thing too with cancer is like, you try to make, I also say this too, like when my dad passed away, especially when my dad was sick, I was trying to make jokes and people would be like, oh,
yeah,
like, you know, and you're like, no, it's hilarious. Let me tell you why. Right. This is really funny stuff, you guys.
I mean, this episode, like, I mean, I looked it up, and you know, obviously, like Michelle said, Jessica Sinclair did go through this, but it just felt so real in that, like, the little moments of it,
especially, you know, the socks. Where,
like,
the socks thing was so like, if you go to surgery in any capacity, your feet are so fucking cold.
Yeah.
that I really loved. I know that it was about quote unquote her sharp feet, toenails, but for your feet get so cold in the hospital. I don't know what that is, but yes. Thank you.
And there's a moment too where Lennon has to say goodbye to Maggie, you know, as whatever. And that happened to me where they let me stay up until like the last minute and then they asked me to leave. And that's when it hit me and like, I'm starting to like fight the tears and I don't want to cry. And I remember the surgeon being there and she just goes, "You all right?" I'm all right. Well, what the fuck? You know?
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had that experience many times where it's just like, you know, this is obviously a huge thing in your life, but the doctor's like, I did like six of these,
yeah,
you know, like today, like whatever, yeah, you know.
When I had C-section for Holden, it was Christmas Eve, and every single person around were talking about their plans for Christmas, and I'm just like, can I have my baby? Anyway,
as a young man, I had salmonella poisoning.
Ooh. Oh,
I was like literally dying. I was so horribly sick, and I was on a gurney in the hospital, and the doctor who had examined me comes over, and I, like out of a movie, I was just like, doc, because I didn't know why I was sick. I was like, doc, what is it? And he looks me up and down and goes, you got the shit. Which I didn't want to say. Yeah, I know. I'm shitting myself to death for the last 5 days. For the love of God, please stop it. But anyway. That was my diagnosis.
I'm glad he cured it.
Yeah. I picture him like doing like Grey's Anatomy style where he's like, son, I don't know. It's never easier to say this.
I'm glad you're laying down.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this?
No.
This show?
It says we'll bring this puppy home, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's bring this puppy scone.
All right, hold on. I gotta get the
celebrate me scones.
I wish that the first song, the Kenny Loggins song in the beginning, had been a Kenny Loggins song I was more familiar with.
Yeah.
So that I would be, because I was like, I think I know. Is this song from growing up in Christian school? Like it was one of those songs that I was like, I am not sure what song this is. I wish it had been Pooh's Corner.
Yeah,
but I always wish people would just play Pooh's Corner.
This is literally impossible. But there was a moment. I remember the first time I saw it. There was a moment I was like, "Those snacks sound horrible together." like meats and scones and ants on a log and rice.
The name Foot Juice alone is. I would never drink. I can't drink it.
Yeah, but
all right. Do you want to rank this one?
Yes.
Sure.
All right, who wants to go first?
I'm going to go first, and I'm going to go with 8.5.
Okay.
I think I'm going with the same. I had that in my head you said it. I think 8.5 is a good, this is a good solid show.
I'm going to break rank and go 9.5.
All right.
The reason I picked it was because during COVID, it popped up on my Hulu, and I was like, it was my comfort food. So,
you know, it's funny. I don't remember if we were on mic or off, but like the idea of a show having that's almost like an added layer, right? Like does this show serve as comfort food is almost like alone a reason to bump it up.
Yeah, I might. Mm-hmm.
I don't have that experience with it, unfortunately.
That's
what my MASH and Cheers was, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it certainly was this. So it's almost going to sound condescending, but it was very pleasant. Like when I was watching it, went down very easy. You know,
I'm gonna go up to 9.
Whoa!
Wow!
Whoa!
You know, I also was thinking I was no. I'm just kidding. I'm keeping my 8.5.
I would fuck you.
Well,
up,
I would be lame.
Oh my God.
What? Wait, what?
All right. Well, it's somewhere in the middle of the. It's sort of the middle of the pack here, but it's right below Scrubs and right above the Bob Newhart Show.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Very good company.
Very good company.
Bob is above that, though. Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm having an issue.
We don't need to.
It's Michelle's change that did it, isn't it, Dad?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you. Yes. That's okay. I mean, look.
Bye, Bob.
This is not the most scientific thing we got going on here.
Yes. So, I mean, if he wants to write in and tell us, you know, plead his case, I'm happy to talk to him.
Yeah.
He's alive, right?
He's alive.
Yes, he is.
Good,
Okay.
You really should listen to him on the Conan O'Brien podcast.
I know. You know,
he's really great.
I wanted to.
And the Ron Bennington one.
I meant to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so yummy.
Yeah.
Michelle, I think you pick.
I do pick, and I kind of want to do an interrupt this to have us watch the first, like the mid-season, do a mid-season review, replacement review.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we might have to wait just because I don't have them all written down. So it's coming, listener and everybody here. So this one is The Mindy Project.
Ooh.
I've seen a couple.
Bitches
That's
be
good.
Representing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, she's talented lady.
She is. Yeah. She is.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't seen that one, so that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't either. That's kind of why I picked it.
Oh, you haven't? So. Oh, interesting.
No.
Especially with the comparisons to New Girl, I think it'll be interesting.
Some would say it's better than New Girl.
Shut the fuck up.
Wow. Some would not.
Yes.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to another FM podcast about sitcoms. We really, really, really appreciate you and hope that you're liking it too. If you've got this far, you don't hate it.
Yeah.
Please get on to the website places where you can review and then write stuff like, I thought they were funny, or I hate them. And tell your friends, because we don't have any.
What?
I'm Michelle Lykowski.
I am Stan Lykowski.
I'm Luke Ward.
I'm Dan, the producer.
And we are another effing podcast about sitcoms. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This has been another effing podcast about sitcoms. The music for our theme song is by Ryan Satoy, and the lyrics and vocals are by our own Michelle Lykowski. Our logo was created by Luke Ward. Follow us on Instagram, and if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, well, we'd certainly appreciate it. Another effing podcast about sitcoms will return in this time slot next week.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.